Angeles. Obsessed with basketball history, he studied the style of 1970s star big man Wes Unseld, a contemporary of his father's. When he was at UCLA, he took advantage of access to Bill Walton and John Wooden, delving into conversations with both as often as possible. He later gave the university $1 million to help fund a basketball facility. Doughy as a kid and young adult, Love had devoted himself to training and remade his body, shedding lots of weight as he spent summers conditioning in the mountains near Park City, Utah. Repeatedly, when the topic of Love's disappearance from offensive strategy was brought up, James or Blatt would reference how he needed to demand the ball or make himself more available by getting his teammates' attention. It would seem like they wanted Love to fit out and not just go with the flow that often bypassed him. It wasn't that Love was having a bad season. His numbers were good, and frequently he was a major force in wins. But he was not the dominating player the team, and perhaps James, expected when they made a major trade for him. Some of this could have been because Love was dealing with rolling periods of back pain that kept him out of games intermittently throughout the season. When it came time to announce the All-Star reserves, the coaches passed on voting him onto the team. He'd been an All-Star three times in Minnesota when he was facing stiff competition among rival power forwards in the Western Conference like Dirk Nowitzki, Tim Duncan, and Blake Griffin. James's tweet seemed like a nefarious jab, one that wasn't just opaque but came off as passive-aggressive, a James trait that sometimes was irksome. The day after the tweet, Love exploded for his best game of the season, scoring 32 points with 10 rebounds in a victory over the Lakers in Cleveland. He hit 7 three-pointers, 3 of them assisted by James. Irving had 28 points, making 5 three-pointers and a season-high 10 assists. James had 22 points, meaning the three had combined for 82 points in the type of performance the entire enterprise was supposed to be about. Fitting in, fitting out, whatever. This type of triple threat had the Cavs looking like a championship-level team. James admitted he was aiming the tweet at Love, which now seemed like a nice story with him responding so strongly. The only thing was Love said he hadn't even seen it. It was an afternoon game, and he hadn't been asked about it earlier in the day. Then James put out an odd denial, reversing course. If I have a problem with a teammate or anyone, I'll say it to their face and not over social media. That's corny and whack, James wrote in another tweet. As he'd done throughout the season, Love took the high road. I truly feel if LeBron had a problem with me or needed to talk to me, for good or for worse, he would have come up and talked to me, he said. There's no problem with us. I'm going to keep saying that, and I'm trying to help this team. That's all that matters. I don't need any validation. The merry-go-round kept moving. Eventually, it led to wins in 18 of 20 games. Whatever James was trying to accomplish with the fit-in, fit-out message, it didn't change much. Love continued his inconsistency. Though he'd had a few impactful games as the season went on, his teammates passed him the ball even less, but he avoided complaining. The team just kept winning. Timo Mozgov kept putting together nice performances. He scored 20 points in a blowout of the Heat. They blasted the Wizards by 38 points as J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert combined for 27 points. The team put up 127 points that night, Love, James, and Irving combining for 68. It was 51 more points than in the previous trip to Washington. Smith had 17 points in a triumphant return to Madison Square Garden. Love made 8 three-pointers in a win at Detroit, with James assisting on 5 of them. The Cavs then added veteran center Kendrick Perkins to the roster, another veteran voice in the locker room from someone with a championship ring. It culminated with an 11-point home victory over the Warriors, who'd become the championship favorite, with Stephen Curry, who'd become the MVP favorite. James scored 42 points with 11 rebounds and 5 assists, his most forceful game of the season. The Cavs moved through March by winning 14 of 17 games. After once falling to as low as 7th in the Eastern Conference standings, they leapt into second place. When the Cavs arrived in San Antonio for a nationally televised game against the Spurs, James's world was totally different than when he walked out of the building after Game 5 of the finals the previous June. He was on a new, younger, and up-and-coming team, and they were coming together in such a way that he was feeling good about his decision to leave Miami. Irving was hot, he was healthy, and he'd found a way to play with James that had both fulfilled and was growing. The team's new players, Shumpert, Smith, and Mozgov, were all thriving. And Blatt was being Blatt, his bravado expanding with each win. His team was 23-5 over the previous 2 months at that point. Headlines in the Israeli media, which were closely charting the Cavs' progress, were championing his efforts in turning the team around. Before the game, Spurs coach Greg Popovich was reminded he'd predicted the Cavs would eventually get themselves together. As he had in November, when Blatt had coached a mess of a game in a close loss, Popovich praised his peer. "I know what his system is, and if he had a group that was willing, I knew it would turn," Popovich said. "But it takes a while to have a coach institute a system and have everybody buy in, understand it, feel good about it, gain confidence. He's a good one. He knows what he's doing. The guys figured that out, and they're playing great basketball." A few minutes later, down the hallway, Popovich's remarks of praise were repeated to Blatt. Instead of just accepting Popovich's compliment, Blatt again took an offensive posture in repeating his biography. "I came back to the United States after 33 years speaking the same language," Blatt said. "Don't forget I coached in Russia, Italy, Turkey, Greece. That was a lot harder. Those are different languages, different cultures, and different worlds." He said he was one of the most experienced coaches in the world, and then compared his accomplishments to the Spurs' success, 5 titles over the previous 15 years, to the various championships he'd won in Europe. On a roll, Blatt was asked when he knew he'd found his footing as an NBA coach, as Popovich indicated he'd observed in recent months. "The day after I signed," he said. As hot as the Cavs were running by then, Blatt felt safe doing some gloating. It did take some savvy to manage all the obstacles that had been put before him, and he was leading a team that was improving by the week. But those involved with the team, the people who were at practice, in film sessions, and around the bench, knew there was an elephant in the room no one really talked about. James did follow Blatt at times, but he frequently freelanced without concern. Blatt had yielded, perhaps out of survival, and operated around it. Meanwhile, James and many of the other players still seemed to connect better with Lou. James had another good game in San Antonio, scoring 31 points. Yet he was relegated to a sideshow. Irving had one of the most remarkable games the NBA had seen in the previous decade, putting on a shooting and scoring display that was breathtaking and record-breaking. He made 20 of 32 shots, all 7 three-pointers he attempted, all 10 free throws he attempted. He again had 5 assists. He scored 14 straight points in the second quarter. At the end of the fourth quarter, with the Cavs down 3 points, James acted as the inbounder and Irving got free to nail a 3-pointer at the buzzer that forced overtime. The clutch shot was over Kawhi Leonard, the freakishly long-armed and giant-handed defensive beast who'd won the finals MVP the year before and was a month away from winning Defensive Player of the Year. Irving would eventually score 15 straight Cavs points in the fourth and overtime. The Cavs eventually won 128-125, and Irving totaled 57 points. It broke James's franchise scoring record. It was the most points a James teammate had ever had. It was the most points a Popovich coach team had ever allowed. It was the most points scored against a defending champion since Wilt Chamberlain put up 62 on the Boston Celtics in 1962. It was a moment to celebrate Irving, but it was also graduation day in certain respects. His career had been knocked to a different track when James arrived, and his mental preparations for it weren't enough. Beyond the mechanics of going from the team's primary scorer to operating alongside one of the greatest scorers of all time, Irving had struggled with James's leadership maneuvers. Tough love, real love, coded messages, being caught in the middle of the James Blatt seesaw, it had been a challenging season for Irving to find his place. He had always been a player who followed his instincts. Usually, do whatever is necessary to get your team a basket. And he was suddenly in a world where there were so many more layers. Slowly, he'd found room to flourish. James wanted him to. He was invested in making it a partnership. But they were so different, their ages, their styles, their experiences, that it was a daily challenge. He hadn't totally figured it out, but Irving's willingness to work at it had won James over. And as he drilled shot after shot on the Spurs, he got something from James that he almost never showed. Awe. "The kid is special," James said. "We all know it. We all see it. For him to go out and put up a performance like he did was incredible. As long as my elbow's pointed at the rim, I feel like it has a great chance to go in," Irving said, explaining how he'd hit some circus shots. He was also the beneficiary of Mozgov, who acted like a road grader in leveling Spurs point guard Tony Parker with screen after screen that allowed Irving to eat up the Spurs' defensive scheme. Irving gave Miller, who'd become a valued mentor, supporter, and friend, his shoes from the performance as a gift, complete with autograph, date, and the number 57. Miller cradled them like a baby as he boarded the team bus. As for the James Love dynamic, that remained more of a work in progress. After a victory in Milwaukee a few weeks later, James gathered some teammates for a group photo in the jetway as the team was about to board their plane to head home. James, Irving, Shumpert, Smith, Mozgov, Tristan Thompson, and the newly signed Perkins were together. Again, James's Twitter feed became a news item when he posted the photo along with the caption, "Click up." The implication was that this was James's click on the team. That wasn't even truly the case, as James Jones and Miller, two of James's most adored teammates in his career, weren't in the photo. But the focus immediately was on Love's absence after he'd had another less-than-stellar game, scoring just 9 points with 3 rebounds. Once again, relationships and the future were thrust to the forefront as chatter enveloped the team. The next day, Love had scheduled a round of morning radio interviews as part of a marketing deal he'd signed to promote chocolate milk. Love, who had been guarded in so many interviews all season, was refreshingly honest in the discussions. As expected, his relationship with James came up. "You know, we're not best friends. We're not hanging out every day, but we see each other every day," Love told Mike Greenberg and Mike Golic on ESPN Radio. "If we have a chance at the end of the year to hoist that Larry O'Brien trophy, then it's all been worth it. There's been times this season that I forgot my role. But then seeing the end result, it kind of changes everything. Had it been different, maybe I would have felt a different kind of way." Later, on Dan Patrick's national radio show, Patrick asked Love who would get his vote as MVP. Curry and the Rockets' James Harden were candidates, with the Cavs' strong second-half surge making James an option too. Time spent on the court? LeBron took a couple weeks off. They're both having MVP-type seasons. But I'm going to go with Russell Westbrook because every single night you're looking at his stat sheet, Love said. I think Russ is arguably having the better season. Love's viewpoint was reasonable. Westbrook had been carrying the Thunder after defending MVP Kevin Durant was lost for the season with a foot injury. Love had been teammates with Westbrook at UCLA, and they had a long-standing relationship. Love also once again repeated he wanted to be a Cav long-term. That didn't matter. Headlines took off because Love's comments were on the heels of James's tweet. Love giving an honest answer instead of defaulting to saying his teammate should win MVP became fresh chum on the talk show circuit. Love's 22 points and 10 rebounds on 10 of 13 shooting in the next game, yet another Cavs blowout win in Memphis, didn't quell it much. "I don't really think too much of it, really," James said, trying to defuse the matter. "Kevin has his own opinion. Who he believes is MVP, no one should fault him for that." Several days later, though, James got in a playful dig. When he was asked who he'd vote for in the MVP race, he smiled. "Who would be my vote?" he said. "Kevin Love." Chapter 9. Timeouts and Fighter Pilots. The Cavs finished the season 53-29, going 34-9 after the night in Phoenix when they'd fallen to 19-20 to capture the number 2 seed for the East playoffs. They sacrificed a few games at the end to rest players, or the record might have been even better. After dealing with back, knee, and wrist issues, LeBron James was healthy. After dealing with knee issues, so was Kyrie Irving, and frequently playing brilliantly alongside James. Love was battling back problems, but was able to play through it most nights. The rest of the team was in good shape. They were going into the playoffs with star power, depth, health, and momentum, all a team could ask for. Just before the end of the regular season, the Cavs beat the Bulls, who had a strong finish to the season to surge into the number 3 seed. James had played well, posting his first triple-double of the season. But the Bulls, who lost 3 of 4 games to the Cavs, were in it until the end, despite star Derrick Rose missing the game with a minor injury. As they lined up for a potential showdown in the second round of the playoffs, the Bulls thought the outcome proved they'd fare well against the Cavs in a possible playoff series. "It would be great to play them in the playoffs," said Bulls team leader Joakim Noah, who had a healthy personal rivalry with James after seeing him in 3 playoff series over the previous 5 years. "It would be very, very exciting, something that I really hope happens." At the first postseason practice, James had brought some show-and-tell material. He pulled out the 2 diamond-encrusted championship rings he'd won with the Miami Heat to show his younger teammates. Over the next few days, the Cavs' 3 stars smothered the outclassed Boston Celtics through the first 3 games. In Game 1, James, Love, and Irving combined for 69 points, with Irving putting up 30 and Love pulling down 12 rebounds as he led a punishing of the Celtics' big men on the boards. In Game 2, the 3 scored 69 again, and again, Love helped smash the Celtics in the trenches. In Game 3, the Celtics tried to push back on their own floor, going to the traditional underdog game plan of playing physical. Celtics guard Evan Turner slammed James down and was called for a flagrant foul. Jay Crowder, Boston's young and tough forward, leveled Irving on a drive to the basket, causing Timofey Mozgov to retaliate by shoving him. Later, Tristan Thompson got under the skin of Gigi Datome after a rebound battle, and the 2 men went face-to-face. Celtics coach Brad Stevens was excoriating his team during timeouts to fight, and they were, but the Cavs were just stronger. By Game 3, Irving looked a little off, not moving as well as normal. He'd say after the game that his acceleration was missing. What he didn't say was that he'd sprained his right foot and it was affecting him. It didn't matter. Love nailed 6 three-pointers, his most in 2 months, and scored 23 points. For Love, who'd waited for 7 seasons to make the playoffs, it was a highly satisfying moment. It was the type of performance that made the drama of the previous 9 months, the trade demand, the reduction in stats, the various controversies, worth it. That went for everyone. "Kevin's been highly criticized this year," James said. "I know why. When you have a big 3, they've got to find someone. When I was in Miami, Chris Bosh was that guy at one point. I've seen it before. They've got to find somebody. Kevin was the guy they tried to find and tried to tear him down. The one thing about him, he's always stayed positive. I've always believed in him." This, of course, wasn't true. There were times when James openly doubted Love. Others on the team did as well. But with the Cavs' 3 stars averaging a combined 68 points a game over the first 3 games of the series, no one was complaining. As the first quarter of Game 4 unfolded, the Cavs were playing beautifully as a unit. They jumped out to a 10-point lead, executing some of their smoothest offense of the season. James and Irving were playing together seamlessly, the product of months of work. Love was making an impact as a third scorer and combining with Thompson and Mozgov to create a relentless front line. J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert were playing their roles perfectly, finding ways to contribute at both ends. David Blatt had found game plans that seemed to take advantage of his players. His defensive changes when the mid-season reinforcements arrived proved to be effective. Then Crowder missed a long three-pointer badly, and the ball bounced toward Love, who was about to get yet another rebound. As he moved into position by boxing out Celtics center Kelly Olynyk, one of the players Stevens had been ripping into about the Cavs' rebounding dominance, Olynyk got his right arm tangled with Love's left arm. The ball was to the right, and Love was reaching to control it. Olynyk pulled Love to the left, grimacing as he yanked Love's arm down and away from his body. The official called a foul on Olynyk, stopping play. James, Irving, and Smith turned and started heading up the floor. The crowd hissed at the call, but Love was yelling in pain. He immediately started running toward the tunnel to the visitors' locker room, his left side lower than his right. His left hand was in a fist, the arm motionless. As he passed the team bench, the players saw what appeared to be a dent in his shoulder area. Several covered their mouths as they saw the damage. Olynyk had dislocated Love's shoulder. The team's momentum was crushed. The incident instantly elevated the animus. Late in the first half, Kendrick Perkins, who was the Cavs' de facto enforcer, buried his forearm in Crowder's neck on a pick, and the teams ended up in a scrum at the center of the floor. When the team got to the locker room, Love was in a sling and irate at Olynyk, telling teammates he was convinced it had been done on purpose. The replays helped convince them. Less than 90 seconds into the second half, Smith and Crowder got tied up fighting for position on a rebound. Crowder's style of play had gotten on the Cavs' nerves over the four games. When he shoved Smith in the back, Smith reacted violently, swinging his arm back and hitting Crowder in the jaw. Crowder crumpled, falling awkwardly and injuring his left knee. Smith was quickly ejected. As Crowder was carried to the locker room, he screamed at Smith, telling him it was a Bush League play. At that point, the Cavs were up 19 points and the series was effectively over, but the body count was piling up. It was certain Love was going to be out an extended period, and it looked likely that Smith was headed for a suspension that would spill over into the next series. Meanwhile, Irving again wasn't himself. The foot was bothering him, and he ended up making just 11 of 30 shots over the final two games of the series. The Cavs had just finished a sweep, but there were no smiles. "I have no doubt in my mind that he did it on purpose," Love said about Olynyk. "Oh, the league will take a look at it, and it better be swift and just." The league would also be taking a look at Smith. "This is a situation I put my teammates in, and it's a selfish act because I don't want anything that we do collectively to be taken away by one individual," Smith said. "My team is going to pay for it. I'm nervous as hell to see what could come out of this." The league ruled the next day. Olynyk was suspended for a game the following season. Smith was suspended for the next two games and hit with a $116,000 fine, his record of 27 previous suspended games certainly hurting his case. Perkins was fined $15,000 as well. But by the time the announcement was made, Love was getting ready to have surgery that ended his season. The team had 8 days off before facing the Chicago Bulls in the second round. It was the fourth time in 6 years that James would face the Bulls in the postseason, including his time in Miami. And the Bulls felt like they had a legitimate shot to finally beat him, especially with Love out and Smith suspended. And indeed, Chicago got off to a good start, winning game one by 7 points. The rest had helped Irving's foot. He scored 30 points. And Shumpert was excellent in moving into Smith's spot in the starting lineup, scoring 22 points. But Rose ripped the Cavs, especially as he burned him with the same play over and over late in the game, setting up teammate Pau Gasol for baskets. In an effort to deal with the personnel losses, Blatt altered his game plan to a style the team hadn't used all year. Compounded by the fact that he tried some lineups that hadn't ever played together, the Cavs looked lost for the first time in months. Blatt's failed strategies became an issue, and the grumbling that hadn't been heard from the locker room for a while started to return. James rallied the team to a 15-point victory in Game 2 as he scored 33 points, but he took 29 shots, the most he'd taken in a playoff game in 6 years. As the talent level dropped and the stress mounted, James kept ending up with the ball. It was not the style the team had worked on. Shumpert played strongly again but suffered a groin injury and was wrapped in ice in the locker room after the game. Yet with the series 1-1 and going to Chicago, the Bulls were in a great position. Smith came back from suspension and made 4 three-pointers, but Shumpert was diminished in Game 3. James played poorly, missing 17 shots and committing 7 turnovers. At one point, James was called for a technical foul for taunting Noah. James and Noah had battled for years. Noah had once ripped James for celebrating too much, James barking at him from the foul line while Noah was on the bench. When James was in Miami, Noah called the Heat Hollywood as hell, his way of calling them phony. This time he called James a bitch after a play and it set James off. I love his emotion as a competitor, but I think the words that he used to me was a little bit too far, James said. I'm a father with 3 kids. It got very disrespectful. Noah was stunned. He'd called James much worse to his face at other points within the same game. Disrespectful, he said. I got mad respect for LeBron. We're just 2 players trying to win a game, that's all. I don't know what he's talking about. Beyond that, the bad news for Cleveland was Irving re-injured his right foot. He stayed in the game and played on it, limping at times and putting more weight on his left side. I just tried to stay out there for my brothers, he said, and use myself as a decoy. It was the first time it appeared as if Irving's injury was serious, and it came at a bad time. Despite the challenges, the Cavs were tied in the final moments and hoping for overtime. With 3 seconds left, they defended perfectly, breaking the Bulls' inbounds play. Rose threw up a desperation shot at the buzzer, with the much taller Thompson challenging the shot, and the ball banked in off the backboard, winning the game and giving the Bulls a 2-1 series lead. Rose just stared ahead as teammate Taj Gibson lifted him into the air, while the crowd in his hometown screamed in glee at one of the biggest shots of his life, the last of his 30 points. Thompson bent over as if someone had punched him in the stomach. When he got to the locker room, his teammates consoled him as he broke down and started to cry for not having been able to defend the shot. Thompson is a relentless competitor who has a sensitive side, which has always made him endearing. His parents are Jamaican, but they moved to a suburb outside Toronto where he grew up. At the urging of his parents, he played soccer as a child, which helped him develop good footwork. He became more interested in basketball after attending some Raptors games where he saw Vince Carter star. As he grew, eventually to 6'10", his footwork proved to be valuable. It's a talent few big men have. He moved to North Jersey in high school so he could play against better competition. When his school, St. Benedict's, lost a high-profile game to St. Patrick and a young star named Kyrie Irving, Thompson got in a fight with his coach and quit the team. That is not Thompson's personality. He's usually even-tempered. The Cavs drafted him with the 4th pick in 2011, 3 picks after they'd taken Irving. He can get emotional, and it can be an aid. He had developed into a relentless rebounder and worker. When he struggled with free throw shooting after his first few seasons in the league, he stopped shooting left-handed, as was his nature, and instead shot right-handed. As Thompson and the rest of the team collected themselves after the brutal loss, James remained calm. He'd been here before. The year he won his first title in Miami, the Heat had been behind in 3 consecutive series and rallied back to win them all. He'd won elimination games on the road. So being down 2-1 wasn't devastating. But with Love out, Irving shaky, and now Shumpert limping, a feeling of unease surrounded the team. James preached calm, even if he wasn't. The Cavs got a break in Game 4 when Gasol was scratched because of a pulled hamstring, but Irving and Shumpert were a mess. They combined to shoot 3 of 18 and limped through it, especially Irving, who labored through 40 minutes. The Bulls had a 7-point lead going into the 4th quarter and looked to be on the verge of taking a 3-1 lead. The Cavs rallied back, Smith hitting 4 three-pointers, and had a 2-point lead with 27 seconds left. Then the team seemed to go into a collective brain freeze. They called three timeouts during the next possession, once because they couldn't get the ball inbounds. Referees advised the Cavs bench that they were out of timeouts. The timeouts appeared to be wasted as the Cavs struggled again to execute the inbounds, and James was quickly trapped. Without a timeout, he tried to get free and was called for an offensive foul. It was his eighth turnover of the game. He was carrying a heavy burden, but he was far from playing his best. Moments later, the Bulls tied the game when Rose left the hobbled Shumpert in the dust and scored on a layup. There were 9.4 seconds left. Matthew Dellavedova, who'd been pressed into more service with Irving's injuries, went to inbound the ball. Blatt, inexplicably, started walking onto the court to call timeout, a timeout the Cavs didn't have. It was perhaps ironic that it was in Chicago on the second night of the season, Blatt stood outside the locker room and reminded everyone he was not a rookie head coach. He had become furious months later when media questioned why Lou was seen signaling for and managing timeouts from the bench. It was this loss of composure in the heat of the game that had shaken his players' confidence in him, and it all came to a head in that moment. Had Blatt been given the timeout, the Cavs would have been called for a technical foul, and the Bulls would have gotten a free throw and the ball in a tied playoff game with less than 10 seconds to go. Lou immediately saw Blatt's mistake and reached out and pulled him back to the bench. Veteran referee Scott Foster looked at the Cavs bench as Blatt was asking for time, but he didn't stop the game. It was a near miss, a moment of infamy avoided. "I almost blew it," Blatt said. James ended up going to the basket and missing again, having his shot blocked out of bounds. He thought he was fouled, but he was also going 1-on-3. He didn't trust any of his teammates to shoot, and the Bulls knew it. Shumpert was standing alone in the corner, wide open, as James forced the shot. Then the Cavs caught another break. The officials had to look at replays to determine how much time should be left. It was a free timeout to design a play. Blatt got into the middle of the huddle. Blatt wanted to have James inbound the ball for Irving to take the final shot. Irving hadn't been in the game, and Blatt wanted him to sub in. Blatt's reasoning was sound. James was the team's best passer, and the Cavs had just struggled massively to get the ball in bounds against the Bulls' defense moments before. Several times during the season, Blatt made James the inbounder on crucial plays, and it worked. James heard the play and stopped Blatt as he was drawing it up. He said he would be taking the final shot. He drew up a simple play where he'd fake going to the rim and then pop out to take a jumper. It was not a high-percentage play. It was also not unusual for a superstar to overrule his coach at such a moment. With 1.5 seconds left, James made his move and shook his defender, Jimmy Butler. As he popped open right in front of the Bulls bench, Coach Tom Thibodeau jumped back as he almost made contact. He wasn't expecting the James move either. James launched the shot from 20 feet, his toe on the three-point line. He fell into the bench and watched it drop through the net, shoulder to shoulder with Bulls players. It was salvation and a moment of redemption from James, who had been a big reason why his team nearly lost. It might have saved the Cavs season. It is impossible to know what would have happened had his team gone down 3-1, but it seemed unlikely they'd be able to recover. It was one of the biggest shots in a career that was already filled with them. After the game, Blatt explained the last play design, which featured Dellavedova inbounding. "We wanted Deli to throw it right in over their shoulder. And with that amount of time on the clock, let LeBron take a shot, and he did. Great play." When asked for his side of the huge event, James told a different story. "To be honest, the play that was drawn up, I scratched it," he said on the interview podium as he gave a little smile. "I told Coach, just give me the ball. It's either going to overtime or I'm going to win it. I was supposed to take the ball out. I told him there was no way I'm taking the ball out." In the locker room, the players added to the lore. "At first, Coach had LeBron taking the ball out. I'm like, are you sure?" Smith said. Then he went, No, Bron, you get it. I'm like, okay, we need to switch it up. In the corner, Irving sat with not only his ailing right foot in ice, but also his left knee, an ominous development that was just starting to present itself. He was favoring his right leg because of the foot, and now the left knee was barking, and he was concerned he'd seriously hurt it. Over the next 24 hours, three highlights kept running. Blatt trying to call timeout, James hitting the game winner, and then the soundbite with James declaring, "I scratched it." In what was supposed to be a triumphant moment, Blatt was having to defend himself. The issues from the season's first few months were rushing back. Blatt's fitness for the job and James's trust issues with him were again in the forefront. "A near mistake was made, and I owned up to it and I own it," Blatt said. "A basketball coach makes 150 to 200 critical decisions during the course of a game, and something that I think is paralleled only by a fighter pilot." Blatt comparing himself to a fighter pilot created a new cycle of reaction, both for his supporters, who loved the brashness, and his critics, who seized on the arrogance. Coaches make mistakes, and it was expected in their playoff experiences. But Blatt's attitude during the season and repeated declarations of his experience had eroded some sympathy. James didn't much help when revealing the details of the final huddle. While all that was happening, Irving was in an MRI machine having his knee looked at. The results came back showing no damage. Irving was relieved. He wasn't just dealing with pain. He was having a mental battle while playing huge minutes through an injury that needed rest. "This has been the biggest mental challenge of my career thus far, just because I want to do more," he said. "I want to be that guy for my teammates as well as for Bron. We build a dynamic of me and him playing off one another extremely well. When you can't do that, and you are limited to certain things, you have to come to grips with it." The tide had turned, though. James was due for a good game, and he found one in Game 5. He scored 38 points with 12 rebounds, 6 assists, and 3 blocks with no turnovers. Irving played with more confidence on his knee and scored 25 points. The Cavs won by 5 and took the series lead for the first time. With 10 minutes left in the game and the Cavs up 10 points, the Bulls Gibson hit Dellavedova with a clean but hard pick. A few seconds later, Gibson knocked Dellavedova to the ground as they scrambled for rebounding position. Already a popular player in Cleveland because of his hustle plays, Dellavedova was spending more time on the floor, and his style of play had irritated the Bulls. As he was lying on the ground, Dellavedova leg-locked Gibson, who reacted by kicking him to get free. Officials ejected Gibson, who was enraged because he felt it was a dirty play. It certainly was a unique one. As the replay was shown on the scoreboard, James and Mike Miller howled with laughter on the sideline at Dellavedova's unconventional move. "I've never seen that in my life," James screamed to Miller. The Bulls were angry, and they were defeated. The Cavs came back to win the series in Game 6 in Chicago, pulling away for a 19-point win. It was costly. Irving landed on Thompson's foot in the second quarter and tweaked his left knee again, forcing him to leave the game. Thompson, who had been victimized by a few shots in the series, had a strong game, scoring 13 points with 17 rebounds. Dellavedova, filling in for Irving, finished with 19 points in his best game of the season. James missed a triple-double by a single rebound and vanquished the Bulls yet again. Several days later, Thibodeau was fired, and the team began a multi-year restructuring. James had effectively ended a once-promising era of Bulls basketball, not unlike the way Michael Jordan had with many teams in his career in Chicago. That included beating the Cavs 3 times in the playoffs. Jordan's series-winning basket in Game 5 in 1989 being one of the great moments of his career. The Cavs had 5 days off before starting the Eastern Conference Finals against the number 1 seed Atlanta Hawks, who assembled a 60-win season despite largely being in the shadows because of all the attention on the Cavs. Smith made 8 three-pointers in Game 1, and James again had a huge game with 31 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists as the Cavs won on the Hawks' floor. Smith dedicated the game to his mom, Ida, who'd supported him throughout his tumultuous life. He'd had suspensions, feuds with coaches, and legal troubles and tragedy. In 2007, he drove an SUV through a stop sign near his home in New Jersey and collided with another car. His close friend Andre Bell, who was in the passenger seat, died from his injuries. Neither Smith nor Bell were wearing seatbelts. Smith avoided major injury. He later pleaded guilty to reckless driving and served 24 days in jail. It was a crushing and soul-searching time in his life. After so many challenges and lessons, it felt to Smith like he's finally getting a chance at doing things the right way. James had been part of it. He'd taken Smith under his wing as he promised, and Smith was flourishing. "The chance to come and play with LeBron has been a dream come true," Smith said. "I dreamed about this for years." In another turn, James praised Blatt for the game plan he'd constructed over the previous week to slow down the Hawks' potent offense and three-point weapon, Kyle Korver. It wasn't quite on Smith's level, but Blatt had shouldered plenty of negativity, and James, realizing a chance, tried to change the narrative. "We have a great coaching staff that gives us a game plan," he said. "Throughout these 6 days, we've been balancing ways we can try to stop what they do." But the aftermath was again about Irving as he re-aggravated his left knee and was forced to the locker room. "The most frustrating part is seeing holes in the defense that I'm used to attacking," he said. Irving was unsettled about playing on the bad foot and knee and now several times had not finished games because of discomfort. But there were hints from within the team that he just needed to toughen up. He'd been told nothing was seriously wrong, and it left the impression that it was simply about playing through the pain. "It's a combination of pain management and what the physical symptoms are," Blatt said. "It's just a matter of, is he healthy enough to play? Does he feel healthy enough to play? That's all." "Everyone's pain tolerance is different, but my responsibility is much higher than a lot of guys," James said, seeming to compare his willingness to play through pain to Irving's. "Not only on this team, but a lot of guys in professional sports, and I take it very seriously." On the day of Game 2, Irving and Cavs team doctor Richard Parker took a private plane from Atlanta to Pensacola, Florida, so Irving could be seen by famed orthopedist Dr. James Andrews. Irving continued to be very concerned about his knee, and Andrews reviewed his tests and his case. He recommended Irving stop treating the right foot issue and focus solely on the knee and rehabilitating it. That included rest. Irving made it back for the game, but did not play. The Cavs didn't need him, winning by 12 as James was great yet again with 30 points, 9 rebounds, and 11 assists. In the third quarter, Dellavedova was involved in a controversial play. With a loose ball on the court, he dove to corral it and in the process tried to block out Korver. He instead landed on Korver's ankle, causing a bad sprain that ended up forcing Korver to undergo surgery a few days later. Dellavedova and the Cavs saw it as a hustle play with an unfortunate ending. The Hawks saw it as a player diving at the legs of one of their stars. The Hawks' last stand came in Cleveland in Game 3, but the Cavs won by 3 in overtime. Irving sat again. Dellavedova was strong relief, scoring 17 points, but again was involved in controversy. Going for a loose ball, he tripped over another player and fell at the knees of Al Horford, another Hawks star. After the Korver play, the Hawks were wary of Dellavedova. Horford responded by dropping an elbow on Dellavedova's head and neck. He was ejected, like Gibson had been in the previous series, for retaliating. "He went after my legs," Horford said. "If it was on purpose, we don't know. Maybe it wasn't on purpose, but with his track record, I just felt like it was." By this point, Dellavedova was reaching cult-like status in Cleveland as his play was vital with Irving out. He had excelled as an Australian rules football player as a child, which formed his sensibility about competition. He focused on basketball by the time he was a teenager, eventually earning a scholarship to St. Mary's College near San Francisco, which had established a pipeline of bringing in Australian players. He was a star there, becoming the school's all-time leader in scoring, assists, games, and three-pointers. Undersized and without much athleticism, he went undrafted. But Mike Brown, who was the Cavs coach at the time, had gotten to know Dellavedova's game well. Brown's son Elijah was a high school star in Orange County, California, and being recruited by St. Mary's. Brown watched a lot of their games and fell in love with Dellavedova. On draft night, several teams called wanting to sign Dellavedova after he wasn't selected. A little bidding war developed, and it came down to the team offering to guarantee him $100,000 to sign. The Cavs were unsure if he could be an NBA player, but decided to make the investment. It turned out to be a quality one. His fearless play and willingness to outwork more talented players had kept him in the league, and his ability to learn the NBA game ended up making him needed. And the fans loved his workmanlike nature and his nickname, Deli. By game four, the Cavs had regained the momentum of the second half of the season. They had found a way to survive without Love, mostly thanks to Thompson. When they crushed the Hawks by 30 points to end the sweep and clinch a trip to the finals, things turned emotional. The group had earned the celebration and some reflection. Their journey had been unprecedented, and all of the dramatic moments, here they were zooming into the finals with a 7-game win streak. I had to be very patient, which I'm not very patient. I'm not a very patient guy. But I knew I had to work on that, said James after scoring 23 points with 9 rebounds and 7 assists. He was just 3 assists away from averaging a triple-double for the series. To be able to sit at one point during the season and see us at 19-20 and watching my team struggle and me sitting out 2 weeks, they wanted Coach Blatt fired, saying we need another point guard, will LeBron and Kyrie be able to play together? So many storylines were just happening at that point in time. For us to be sitting at this point today, being able to represent the Eastern Conference in the finals, this is special. It's very special. After a grinding 6 months, Blatt was holding another trophy, this one for winning the Eastern Conference. He'd won many before in Europe, and here he was doing it again. As his fans, especially in Israel, pointed out, he must be doing something right. I know it's hard for people to understand because they don't really know my path and my career, but this is also a new situation for me and a new place for me, Blatt said. LeBron came home. I left home to come here, and I left a lot of people that I love dearly and a lot of people that I'm close to, so close to, in order to pursue a dream. That's a big sacrifice on the part of my family and the place that I'm from. It's special because it's all worthwhile. Part of the reason for the confidence was Irving, who returned and looked healthier as he scored 16 points in just 22 minutes. The treatment Andrews suggested was working, and Irving was hopeful. They had some more time off before the next series, and he was hoping it would help. Their opponent would be the Golden State Warriors, who'd become the favorite after going through the season 67-15 as their point guard Stephen Curry morphed into one of the league's most dominating players in winning the Most Valuable Player award. They'd only lost 3 times in 3 series before reaching the finals and would have home court advantage. Even considering all that, the Cavs were feeling confident. They'd smashed the Warriors the last time they'd played, and they had the best record over the last 3 months of the season. James was playing at a high level. The role players were delivering. Blatt had pieced together a lineup that was working without Love. They figured they'd weathered the worst of the storm. They hadn't. Chapter 10. It Didn't Feel Right. Dredrick Irving slammed the door to the trainer's room and quickly walked out of the locker room into the hallway. A few minutes later, Jeff Wexler, the agent for Kyrie Irving, entered and reopened the training room door and went in. Family members or agents being in a locker room is unheard of, and the training room is one of the most guarded places in professional sports. This was an extreme situation. Irving had collapsed during overtime of Game 1 of the finals and limped off the floor. It was his left knee again. This time, it was different, and Irving knew it. The pain was acute. He'd been trying to drive on the Warriors' Klay Thompson when they banged knees, and he'd dropped to the court as pain seared around his knee. As he rounded the corner Exiting the tunnel from the court with the help of trainer Steve Spiro, he slammed his jersey to the concrete floor in pain and frustration. The left knee, the one he'd been rehabbing and treating with every therapy known to medicine for weeks, was on fire. The Cavs had gone step for step with the Warriors all night. Coach David Blatt believed his team's best chance was to slow the Warriors and their offensive talents down, and they had done so, with LeBron James controlling the ball and the team's defenders desperately attempting to stay with the Warriors' shooters. Neither team led by more than three during the fourth quarter, with James and Irving scoring or assisting on every basket. With 30 seconds left and the game tied, Irving leapt to make a fantastic block on Curry from behind. It was probably the finest defensive play of his career. He had looked healthy throughout the game, which was a huge development, as he scored 23 points and moved well. Regardless of how the game turned out, that portended well for the Cavs' hopes in the series. If James could exert his will, and Irving was close to his normal self, the underdogs believed they had a chance. The Cavs ended up getting two chances to win the game at the end of the fourth quarter, with Iman Shumpert's shot at the buzzer just missing as it skidded off the rim. Then Irving went down and the Cavs fell apart. Curry scored four quick points, and Harrison Barnes made a three-pointer, blowing the game open. The Warriors won by 8, Curry finishing with 26. James had 44 points but took 38 shots to get there, missing 20. James had sworn off that type of volume scoring earlier in his career, and playing that way, dominating the ball and finding ways to shoot even if the shots weren't quality, made him sick. But the once-deep Cavs had gotten thin, and he agreed this was the best chance. In the training room, Dr. Richard Parker manipulated Irving's knee. One of the finest surgeons in the country, Parker didn't find any damage to the ligaments. Just like the MRI showed, everything was still connected. So why was Irving in so much pain? His father pulled general manager David Griffin aside. Irving had played 44 minutes as he was recovering from knee issues. The Cavs had sent him to the best to be examined and thrown all their resources at caring for him, but Blatt had played him heavy minutes. In the Cavs' previous six games, Irving had been unable to finish three because of the left knee. Two other games he didn't play at all. He was mystified and, once again, concerned. "I don't know what I felt, but it didn't feel right. I'm in some pain. It was different than what I had been experiencing," he said as he looked down at the throbbing joint. "Your body works in mysterious ways. When something gives out, I don't know. Obviously, you can hear in the tone of my voice I'm a little worried." The next morning, Irving went again to get imaging. The scan showed something stunning. He had fractured his left kneecap. He was done for the rest of the series, and probably for some of the following season. A flight was arranged, and he returned to Cleveland with Parker, who was to perform surgery immediately to repair it. The team believed it was a direct result of the blow from Thompson, and nothing to do with the previous inflammation or the heavy minutes. But there was some question about whether Irving had been overworked, weakening the knee and opening himself up to the injury. There were no minute restrictions coming into Game 1. There were no minute restrictions in Game 4 against Atlanta, Blatt said, trying to defend himself. "My take on the injury was that he got kneed in the side of his knee. It was a contact injury, and the result was a fracture of the kneecap." Either way, the Cavs were now without two of their three best players. Love was still in the early stages of recovery from shoulder surgery, plus down 1-0 in the series. It had been a long, hard season of body blows and recoveries. This had the feeling of a knockout punch. "It's a huge blow for our team, especially at this stage," James said. "You want to try to be as close to full strength as possible throughout these games, especially when you're going against a worthy opponent like we're facing. So it's a tough situation." Matthew Dellavedova, who had played 9 empty minutes in Game 1, was promoted to starting point guard. Blatt believed the only way to compete was to turn the game ugly and to try to play physical. The Warriors had some guys who didn't mind physical play. talented forward Draymond Green and rugged center Andrew Bogut among them. But the Cavs believed they could be tougher than the Warriors' sweet shooting guards, Thompson and Curry. Golden State played a free-flowing style under coach Steve Kerr. They wanted to move quickly and be able to create space to do so. It was pleasant to watch and hard to stop when they got going. Curry and Thompson had the ability to go on numbing shooting streaks, against which there was really nothing that could be done. So the Cavs would try to take that away by force. Blatt put together a game plan where he'd ride big men Timofey Mozgov and Tristan Thompson and continue letting James dictate the offense with methodical possessions. In losing Kevin Love and Irving, the Cavs were down two great offensive players. But one upside was their replacements, Dellavedova and Thompson, were strong defensive players, and Blatt could leverage that. It showed up immediately in Game 2, where Dellavedova's dogged defense seemed to ruffle Curry. The Cavs pounded the Warriors on the boards, and Thompson got 7 offensive rebounds just himself, giving the team invaluable extra chances. The Cavs were abysmal on offense, shooting just 33%. James played a grueling style of bully ball, going a horrific 11 of 35 shooting. James went whole seasons without taking 30 shots in the game. Now he was averaging nearly 40 in the series. But he drew 9 shooting fouls and made 14 free throws, assembling 39 points, 16 rebounds, and 11 assists in one of the most prolific finals games of his career. The Cavs won 95-93 in overtime. Thompson lit up the Cavs with 34 points, but Curry went just 5 of 23 shooting. When Dellavedova was guarding him, Curry was 0 for 8. Blatt used only 7 players. When it was over, James slammed the ball to the floor in fatigue and triumph. It was one of the most improbable wins of his career. The series was tied 1-1. Dellavedova's improbable rise continued. Several months earlier, Griffin searched the market for a trade for another backup point guard because he wasn't sure Dellavedova could handle the position in a playoff setting. Now he wasn't just surviving. He'd made himself into a vital piece of the Cavs' upset hopes. It had caused him to be a breakout celebrity. As for his demeanor, Dellavedova said he wasn't nervous. He was more concerned about staying hydrated because of all the energy it took to guard Curry. Obviously, he's a guy that's been counted out his whole life, James said about his Australian teammate. Probably people have been telling him he's too small, he's not fast enough, can't shoot enough, can't handle it good enough, and he's beat the odds so many times. Blatt joked that the drama was part of the plan to help wake up fans in Israel where games were broadcast in the middle of the night. Blatt's success had inspired national pride there. Though he was from Massachusetts, Blatt had lived in Israel for most of his adult life and considered it home. Numerous Israeli media outlets had come to cover the series, and Blatt was giving some interviews in Hebrew. It led to a different dynamic in press conferences, as some of the Israelis were upset the Cavs players weren't giving Blatt enough credit for his game plan. The funny thing for us in Israel, and LeBron just sat here, we haven't heard the name David Blatt mentioned even one time. And now, after becoming the first coach in Cavaliers history to win a game in the NBA Finals, how much credit do you think he deserves for this win? A reporter asked Dellavedova. Coach Blatt deserves a lot of credit, Dellavedova said. We've got a good game plan going into the game. I think he's done a really good job all year. I enjoy playing for him. Game 3 was a quick turnaround. After having 2 days between games 1 and 2, there was just 1 day before game 3, and the teams had to travel. For the Cavs, who were depleted, it hit them harder. The game plan was the same. Grind it out and let James shoulder the massive load. Again, amazingly, it worked, and the Cavs won another ugly game, 96-91. James again missed 20 shots, but made 10 free throws as he finished with 40 points, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists. He had 123 points in the first 3 games, the most ever in that span in finals history. Dellavedova did it again, playing the game of his life and scoring a career-high 20 points. In the fourth quarter, He tripped as he was fouled, and he flung a shot toward the rim. The ball banked in as he watched, lying on his stomach, setting up a three-point play. If the crowd could have, they'd have stormed the court and carried him out into the streets. Up 2-1, James held the stat sheet and looked at all his missed shots with a furrowed brow. "I'm not okay with it,"